It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Ainsley Earhart.
I'm Charles Payne.
I'm Martha McCallum, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, March 4th, 2024. I'm Evan Brown. The U.S. Supreme Court unanimously rules former President Donald Trump's name must appear on Colorado's ballots, meaning they must appear on ballots all around the United States.
The court stated quite clearly that the election of the president is unique and needs to be carefully protected, and that it was going to, as it did here, watch to make sure states don't try to interfere.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
The Will Kane Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Kane as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
In a 9-0 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Colorado's state Supreme Court was wrong to try to keep former President Donald Trump off the ballot, either for the state's upcoming primary or November's general election. Colorado's high court sided with petitioners that the former president was disqualified from serving as president again, claiming he fomented an insurrection on January 6th of 2021, and the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment bars him. The Supreme Court, however, now says a state can't regulate a federal election as it would affect elections in other states. The former president addressed the ruling from his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida.
You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that, and the Supreme Court saw that very well, and I really do believe that will be a unifying factor.
Unanimous rulings may or may not be rare, but they are decisive. They leave no room for alternate theories or readings of a law, and that may be appropriate for a case which decides whether or not one state can overpower the voters of other states as they choose the person to lead the nation.
The first thing is that Americans should understand that the Supreme Court did not side with Trump or did not side with Biden.
John Yoo is a former Deputy Assistant Attorney General. He also once clerked for U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He's now a professor at the University of California at Berkeley.
The Supreme Court here, I think, stood up for the Constitution and for the traditional way of understanding our law. What happened here was a radical, unprecedented attempt to use a part of the Constitution that had really not been used before, at least not since this post-Civil War period, to try to knock a president off the ballot without any kind of due process, without any review in the federal courts, without the involvement of any federal prosecutors. And I think the Supreme Court stood for our traditions and our political institutions and said, you know, we're not going to allow this kind of radical effort to use the courts to block Trump. But they didn't, they hardly mentioned Trump. They really didn't mention Trump. They really didn't mention January 6th, other than I think from one sentence describing what the Colorado Supreme Court did. Instead, here, the court interpreted this provision the way they would interpret any provision in the Constitution. And I don't think people should be surprised. The only people who should be surprised are the people who are hoping that this kind of long ball Hail Mary attempt to stop Trump using the courts might somehow succeed.
I thought that it was quite interesting that, and I guess this is pretty common for most cases the Supreme Court is, you know, agrees to take up, is that it was really reduced to a single question. Did the Colorado Supreme Court err in its decision making? And that sort of encapsulates the purpose of, I think, the U.S. Supreme Court. It's really a check on all these lower courts to see if they're really doing things on the up and up. And as you mentioned, it really didn't get into Trump or Biden. It didn't get into these far-flung political arguments. It really just answered a very simple question. And I think you would agree that's what we really want the Supreme Court to be doing.
Today's decision is why we have a Supreme Court. It's because at times we need to have a single interpretation of the law that applies throughout the country. And that's especially the case when it's our federal constitution. The Supreme Court has long said its primary role in our system is to make sure there's not 25 or 50 different interpretations of the Constitution going around the country. Each state is not free to just interpret the Constitution, as the court reminded us, and just impose its own meaning in a way that affects the rest of the country. That's one thing. The second thing is the court did, I think, express concern about the idea of states trying to use this provision and essentially decide the election for the rest of the country. And so if you were to say there's a broader message here, I think it's the court saying, you know, we should have confidence, as we have for a long time, in the way the Constitution sets up the way we vote and the mechanisms of government, and they should be allowed to work in the normal way. We shouldn't allow a single state Supreme Court, the one in Colorado, essentially short-circuit everybody, essentially short-circuit the country in the way we have traditionally held presidential elections.
Even though this was a very narrow discussion confined to this one constitutional amendment that Colorado tried to reinterpret or interpret on its own, there are political implications here. The former president is facing a multitude of prosecutions. But does this ruling today affect those, or even if not directly, does it provide any kind of sway, if that's the right word, on how those proceedings would go forward, both the federal ones as well as the ones, say, in New York State and in Georgia?
It's interesting. There's two, I think, things you could pay attention to here. One is, how is the Supreme Court going to approach these Georgia and New York Manhattan DA prosecutions? And here, I think the court showed, you know, some respect for the difference between states and the federal government. But the second thing is, the court cautioned that it would not allow states to contrive ways to use state law, at least in my opinion, to try to interfere in the election for the presidency. The court stated quite clearly that the election of the president is unique and needs to be carefully protected, and that it was going to, as it did here, watch to make sure states don't try to interfere with that, the way the Constitution sets out for the presidential election. But the second thing I would say is, people might be reading too much into this. They shouldn't say, for example, oh, this means that Trump's just going to win down the road on everything that gets to the Supreme Court. In fact, he hasn't before. And he may well not win in the future. There's another important case that was granted last week, whether President Trump has absolute immunity from criminal prosecution in the January 6th special counsel case. I don't think you can read anything in this opinion to tell you how they're going to come out in that next case, which is going to be heard in April, and we'll see a decision by the end of June.
Let's talk about that case, because I think that perhaps has, you know, wider implications here. The idea that a president could be or should be immune from a criminal prosecution, even when he's not in office anymore, even if it has to do with a possible reelection, if the crime is centered on that or theorized on that. What would happen if the Supreme Court were to not rule in Donald Trump's favor here? There are always ripple effects. So what, according to the former president in his own remarks, even just today, it would weaken the presidency because presidents would be afraid of acting, fearing a future prosecution if political tides turn. So is that a realistic concern for a future president, or is that bluster?
No, that's a real concern. Yeah. And Trump's right to raise it. And in fact, it's a current concern that the Supreme Court has raised itself in the past by recognizing that presidents should have complete immunity from being sued for money, you know, civil lawsuits. The question for the court here is not whether we should be worried about that. It's which institution gets to decide that. So historically in the past, that's really been up to current presidents. We expect the current president, who controls all federal, you know, law enforcement in the country, to decide right, whether a case is worth bringing against a former president. And I think for good reasons. And luckily for our country, no president until Biden had ever thought it was so important to prosecute a former president that outweighed all these concerns that President Trump raised today, that, you know, you don't want presidents worrying about being sued when they have to make the hardest decisions on behalf of the country. That said, you know, the law is really not in President Trump's favor on this one. And I think the odds are that President Trump will lose at the Supreme Court, but he will still have the chance to return to the Supreme Court and make these arguments again, because just by saying he's not immune, that he can be sued, doesn't mean he doesn't have good arguments to say the charges are unconstitutional or the charges don't fit what I actually did on January 6th. He's going to get a chance to raise that all again at his trial, and he'll be able to litigate that all the way to the Supreme Court again. And I think the court will give him more favorable hearing there. It's just a real reach to say a president can't even be brought into court in the first place. That's what you mean by this broad immunity claim that has been raised. Right.
We're speaking with former Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yoo, now a UC Berkeley law professor, on today's ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court that a state can't prevent a presidential candidate from appearing on a ballot, specifically meaning former president and current candidate Donald Trump. On the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition, we'll have more straight ahead. You've someone who's been a prosecutor, you're a legal scholar. It's an easy question to ask, but it's a hard one to answer. We've never dealt with this kind of thing before in this country. When we look at current heads of state having potential new heads of state or former heads of state prosecuted, it's usually in nations that we kind of look down upon, whether it's Russia or the like. This isn't comfortable being in this territory, wouldn't you say? I mean, for someone in your profession, anyway.
Well, as you said, I'm not a courtroom prosecutor. I was an official in the Justice Department, but I did work on these very issues about presidential power, immunities, the war on terrorism, and so on. And, you know, one is I don't think it's a good idea at all to prosecute former presidents. On the other hand, we usually let former presidents kind of disappear right off into the sunset.
Right.
I think as just a policy matter, and this is really the important thing, it's not whether under the law Trump has immunity or whether under the law the Biden administration could bring charges against a former president. The Constitution does not prohibit it. In fact, I think the constitutional text goes the other way. The question is whether it's a matter of good judgment, whether it's a matter of wisdom, we used to call it, I think, or statesmanship for the Biden administration to have crossed this Rubicon, to be the first administration to bring charges against a predecessor. I think it's a terrible mistake. I think if you want to have a verdict on President Trump and what he did on January 6th, and whether you think it's insurrection or not, I think we should leave that judgment to the American people to decide this November at the ballot box, rather than trying to use a jury in Washington, D.C., to decide on behalf of the whole country. I filed an amicus brief in this case, so I should mention that somewhere, shouldn't I?
Oh, okay. So, let's talk about the amicus brief in that case. Let's, you know, an amicus brief is, as in case someone doesn't know, it's sort of like an outside opinion, hopefully to sort of guide the court in its decision making. But you therefore get the unique chance to have a real voice in this. So, what is it that you told the court about?
Well, an amicus brief is, you know, like friendly advice, right? You're not a party to the case, so luckily you're not a defendant and you're not the government, but you're somebody who might have a point of view or some information that could help the court make its decision, right? Amicus curiae means friend of the court. So actually, I think we were one of the few parties that actually pressed hard the decision, the grounds for the court's decision. You know, we said, you know, whether you think President Trump committed insurrection or not, that is not up to Colorado to decide. Congress has to pass a law that would authorize prosecutors to make that choice. And then we also pointed out, the court didn't say it directly, but we also pointed out the federal government could have charged President Trump with insurrection, and they didn't. In fact, they charged him with all these more white-collar crime statutes, which I think in the end may not work, like fraud against the United States. And so to the extent, right, the federal government has the ability to charge President Trump for insurrection, it has declined to do so. And the only decision by the federal government on President Trump's conduct is the Senate's impeachment verdict, which was to acquit President Trump of insurrection. So we hoped that we could bring those facts to the attention of the court in a way, maybe in a clear way or in a singular way that the parties weren't able to. And we hope it helped. My brief was on behalf of the Claremont Institute, which is a regular regular actor in amicus practice at the court.
John Yoo, you're a former deputy assistant attorney general and a UC Berkeley law professor, also a former law clerk at the Supreme Court for Justice Clarence Thomas. Thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.